We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Red Leg Roundtable. This time around, I'm so pleased to welcome two-time Gold Glove Award winner, your co-Grand Marshal of the Opening Day Parade here in just a little bit, Pokey Reese. Thanks for joining me.
All right, yourself. Thanks for having me.
Hey, man, I really appreciate it. Hey, so you do get to be the Grand Marshal with Demetri Young coming up here on Opening Day. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit? I mean, they're recognizing that 1999 team a little bit, I think, by doing that, the 25th anniversary. What are your thoughts on this honor and being able to do that?
For one, I think it's a great honor. And I thank them for having, you know, me and one of my best friends in the game, Demetri Young, come back to, represent that 1999 team, which was a great team. And we were definitely sorry we didn't get to go a little bit further that season, but we had a pretty good year.
You did. 96 wins. We're going to get into that wholeheartedly here in a moment. That was, and I told you the other day, as you can see, I have the Pokey Reese authentic jersey from that era. And you were such a breath of fresh air with your youthfulness and excitedness on the field. Mm-hmm. And boy, we'd never seen that kind of arm at second base. I can tell you that. But we'll get all into that here in just a moment. I'm going to start the way I always do. You were born June 10th, 1973 in Columbia, mm-hmm. South Carolina, where I believe you still reside there in South Carolina to this day. Tell me a little bit about growing up in South Carolina.
Well, growing up, it was a struggle. Nine people to a two-bedroom shack, no access to a bathroom. We had to use outhouse, or we just had to use a bucket, so it was kind of humbling, but you know, it made me the person who I am today. So I was raised, but you know, grandmother put the belt to us when we got out of line, you know, but we had, when it came to Christmas, Thanksgiving, and the holidays, we had everything, you know what I mean? So, you know, mom, uncles, dad, great granddad, they all raised us in a village. So, you know, we had family around us that raised us all. Tough love.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, so you were drafted out of high school in the first round by the Reds with the 20th overall pick in 1991. Mm-hmm. What was draft day like for you?
Draft day was pretty – it wasn't like it was today. So we mm-hmm. waited on a phone call, you know, just sitting at home waiting on a phone call. The Reds had the 20th pick. I think I worked out for the Reds scout maybe once or twice. He didn't come around a lot. Well, I didn't see him a lot, but the Pirates had the 22nd pick, and I saw the Pirates almost every week, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I was thinking the Pirates were going to draft me, and the Reds ended up selecting me with the 20th pick, and, you know, I was blessed, you know. It's a blessed opportunity to give me a chance to play the game that I continue to play the game I love. So, I mean, I thank them for that.
What was your trip through the minor leagues like? As a first round pick and a top prospect?
Oh, it was pretty easy for me. I mean, I love the game, going out playing every day. I mean, I went to Princeton, West Virginia from South Carolina here. That was a change. You know, Princeton, West Virginia is a little small town in the mountains. And I played on a high school field, which I think my high school field was better than my first year pro field right up there in Princeton, West Virginia. So I spent 1 year there in Princeton. Then I went to Charleston, West Virginia for a year, played for the late P.J. Carey in Charleston, West Virginia. Then I went 2 years to AA in Chattanooga. I struggled in 93, came back in 94, had a great year. Then the strike came. I think in 94, if the strike wouldn't happen, I may have gotten the call up. But, I mean, that's neither here nor there. So, but and then I went to AAA for 2.5 years in Indianapolis, Indiana. So I spent my time in the minors playing behind Barry Larkin. You had Brett Boone at second. I think you had Willie Green at third. So I know I pretty much wasn't going anywhere playing behind those guys. So I didn't worry about that. I just played, you know, played where my feet were at the time. So,
yeah, those teams, a lot of people might forget now because the AAA team's been in Louisville so long now. But but those teams in Indianapolis were pretty good. You played with some guys that you would, you know, end up playing with there at the big league club.
Yeah, yeah, we had a pretty good team. Steve Gibraltar, you had Keith Gordon, you had Brian Lane. Nigel Wilson was on the team 1 year. He was a high prospect with the Mariners, with the Marlins, I'm sorry. So we had a pretty good team. Mark Bombard was our manager. Jim Thrift was the hitting coach. So, and the late Grant Jackson was the pitching coach. So we had a pretty good staff, and we had a pretty good team.
Now, you made your debut, and I looked it up. It was April 1st, 1997, against Colorado. Mm-hmm. I was at that opening day, and I remember that was the Reds blew out the Rockies that day, mm-hmm. and you came in late in the game. What was it like to kind of get your feet wet in the big leagues?
It was pretty awesome. It was pretty awesome. I mean, I was, you know, obviously I was a little nervous, mm-hmm. you know, to get out. I wanted to get out there and, you know, try to perform. The thing about the big leagues, when you first get up there, you see the stadium, you know what I'm saying? It's huge. You know, I was like, whoa, coming from the minor leagues, you never see anything like that. So, I mean, I was in awe of the stadium, you know, the turf. It was an awesome feeling.
Okay. And I'm going to, well, okay. So I was going to bring this up, and I mean, no disrespect, mm-hmm. but I think it's part of your story that yes. on opening day in 1998, when Barry mm-hmm. Larkin was injured, mm-hmm. you started shortstop and you made four errors, I believe. Yes. Again, no disrespect given, because I think that day, what you did later kind of, you know, you had a bunch of people, myself included, behind mm-hmm. you mm-hmm. because of that rough day you had. And then mm-hmm. eventually, again, a two-time Gold Glove winner. Can you tell me a little bit about, you know, what was happening that day to kind of everything that happened there?
I don't know what was happening that day, but it's part of the story. I mean, I'm not ashamed to say it. I mean, yeah. I tell the kids that. I mean, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. So, you know, I made, four errors in that game. So I was at shortstop. Tony Gwynn got on, the late Tony Gwynn, rest in peace, he got on second base. And he said to me, man, come over here. I said, okay, how you doing, Mr. Gwynn? So he's like, man, don't you even worry about that. You're here for a reason. Go out and perform. Now you come out the next day, get your ground balls, and the rest is history. And that's what I did. I didn't worry about it. I was ready for the next ball. And like I say, the rest is history. So it's part of the story, and I'm definitely not ashamed to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that year when Larkin came back, I remember you playing a lot of third base. Mm-hmm. I remember specifically a series against the Braves. You know, Braves became a measuring stick, right, all through mm-hmm. those 90s. You know, the fans and probably you players alike really wanted to match up well against the Braves. I still remember a series you had against them playing well. Mm-hmm. And that takes you into 1999. And mm-hmm. I want to focus on that mostly because, A, it's 25 years since then. Mm-hmm. B, it's a fan's favorite season, even though, mm-hmm. like you said, you didn't make the playoffs. But you had a great year. You mm-hmm. come on, they put you at second base. Brett Boone's been traded. You bat .285. You get on base at a .330 clip. You mm-hmm. had 37 doubles and 38 steals to go along with career high 52 RBI. Mm-hmm. First of all, individually, what was that season like for you to kind of get on the map a little bit?
It was great. I mean, when you're playing on the lineup with Barry Larkin, Greg Vaughn, Sean Casey, Aaron Boone, Dimitri Young, Mike Cameron, I mean, you're going to have to perform. You know, they're out there performing. You want to go out and perform and do your best. And, yes, it was the best year of my career. And when you get to play every day, you get to, you know, better yourself every day. You know what I mean? So playing every day helped me. And second base, I tell a lot of people, second base is pretty much one of the easiest positions for me to play. You know what I mean? Right. You get to read the bat off the ball a little better, ball outside, the right-handed hitter in the big leagues is going to hit the ball to the right side. So I could read the angles of the bat. Mark Lewis was a big help to that. You know, he sat me down one day. We were out there taking ground balls. He said, look at the bat angle. If the pitch is outside, they're going to hit it this way. Go ahead and get a jump. So that's what I would work on. I would go out and play a game before the game, taking my ground ball. So when I get in the game, I get to those balls in practice. I know I can get to them in the game. So that helped. And Dennis Meinke, he helped me out a whole bunch with the hitting. Ken Griffey Sr., you know, everyone had a part in helping me become the player I became. Ron Oster was my infield instructor. So they all helped me become the player I became that 1999 year.
Yeah, and you mentioned some of those great hitters you had around you, and you did. Mm-hmm. It was a great offensive team. But guys like yourself and Mike Cameron, you had to get on base for all those guys to knock in all the runs and have the success you had. It just really mm-hmm. was quite a year. Now, you mentioned some of the work you did to get ready for second base. Mm-hmm. You were able to cover so much ground. I want to throw one at you. I don't know if you're going to remember it. I mm-hmm. can't even figure out what game it was. Mm-hmm. But I had a game where I was sitting in right center field. Mm-hmm. It was the first inning. I think it was J.D. Drew at the plate for the Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
Might have been the first batter of the game. Mike Cameron comes in and tries to catch a ball. And mm-hmm. center field, it hits off the heel of his glove. And you, Johnny on the spot, you were out there. You picked it up off the high hop, off the AstroTurf, wheeled around, and threw him out at second base. Do you recall that play at all?
Yeah, yes, I do. I was playing. I played a pretty deep second base. Now they call it the shift. So back then, I was playing back there. And, you know, I told the guy they were playing. They played deep because they knew I would play a little bit deeper second base. So I'm like, man, I got those balls. So, you know, going back, Cameron's coming in hard. I'm going out hard. And, you know, Cam made a great attempt. And I was always told never give up on the play. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the ball tipped off his glove and I just stayed with the ball. And I turned around and I threw it in the Larkin and he made the tag. He put the tag on the guy. So, I mean, it's just never giving up on the play. I mean, that's how you play the game. You out there, you give it your all. So that's what I, you know, that's what I did.
Absolutely. And I guess that just typified to me your athleticism, but also apparently you were able to position yourself so that you knew where to be. Mm-hmm. And there's certain players too that have a certain like arm angle or something that makes them unique in a way, even mm-hmm. though the human body for all of us seems to be pretty similar.
Right.
What about the way you kind of cocked that ball kind of behind your ear and with that high angle? Was that something you did on purpose or is it just natural?
It's just natural. And I mean, that comes from throwing a football. I was a quarterback mm-hmm. in high school, so you had to stay. You can't throw the football sidearm. You can. Dan Marino did. Bernie Kosar. Those are great quarterbacks. But, you know, throwing a football, you got to try and come over the top, get the thumb down, get a tight spiral. And I think that's what helped me, you know, try and get on top of everything. So that's what I did. It was just natural.
No doubt about it. I've talked to both Eddie Tobinsey mm-hmm. and Scott Williamson about the 24-12 game early in May of that 1999 year. You were out in Colorado. Mm-hmm. Eddie Nagel started it. Neither of them played in it, but you started and you went 3-for-6 with an RBI and a run scored. Mm-hmm. How crazy was that game to be a part of? I mean, obviously it's in Coors Field, but what was that? Do you remember that one?
Yeah, with the altitude, I mean, it was tough, you know, not playing in that every day like the Rockies do. I mean, it was tough. I mean, I think I had to go in and put IV, get an IV. I mean, I've never played at a high altitude like that. So, you know, you got to try to stay hydrated, you know, keep your body right. So, yeah, we had to go in and I had to go in and get an IV. And I think later on that year, we had a doubleheader up there and I played both games. So, I mean, you can imagine how that was. So, yeah, that was a lot of runs scored. That's a big yard. So, you know, bloopers are going to fall in. The outfielders have to play so deep, you know. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get little chink hits, but the ball flies up there. We were putting the wood on it that day.
You certainly were. I know Casey went 6-for-6.
Right.
He had a great day that day.
Right.
Now, you also, later in the season, you joined the Homer Parade, the 9-home run game at Veterans Stadium. Eddie Tobin, see, I talked to him, as I mentioned, he was in on that as well. I still see that photo of all you guys that hit the home runs. What was it like to kind of be a part of that? And again, the two games I've just mentioned, every season has its moments, right? Mm-hmm. You play all those games. But a memorable season is going to have those moments that fans and players alike will always remember. Hitting 9 home runs in one game will be one of those.
Yeah, that was an amazing feat we pulled in Philly there. I mean, we were hot. I mean, we loved playing on the road. You know, we were one of the best road teams that year. So we going on the road, we trying to shut them up. So, I mean, everybody got in the act. Mark Lewis got in the act. I got in the act, you know what I mean? We're not known for hitting home runs, but, you know, we got in the act, got in on the act. So that was a historic day for us, and I still have that picture in here. I'm going to get it framed and put up in the house here. So, I mean, it was a great day, and I'll never forget that. I mean, me going straight center in Veterans Stadium, I think the wind was blowing out a little, but, I mean, it was a great feat.
It doesn't matter if it was or not. You're on the list there. Let's back up just a little bit. I remember when you guys broke spring training camp, Greg Vaughn and Mike Cameron were on ESPN on a Baseball Tonight special. And you know, nobody on the outside expected the Reds to do much. You'd had, a down season, you know, 2 or 3 years in a row, some injuries to key players, things like that. But Greg Vaughn was basically like, no, we're here to stay. We're contenders. What was it like as a young player? Because you were there with Aaron Boone and Casey and multiple other younger players, even Mike Cameron. What was it like at the start of that season? Did you feel like there was something special in the offing?
Yeah, every year you go in to the season thinking, look, this is our year. So the first day in spring training we get there, Greg Vaughn, he comes over from San Diego. He calls we never done this before. He calls everybody in the cage. I mean, we started hitting off the tee in the cage as a team, just talking hitting. Fundamental hitting stuff we've never done as a being a Red coming up in the system. None of the older guys ever done that with us, with me. So that was big, and that let me know Greg Vaughn was the leader of the team. I love Larkin. Larkin is a brother to me, Hall of Famer. But Larkin led by example. He didn't speak as much, but Greg coming off. I think they were in the World Series of San Diego the year before. So coming in. He put us in, and this is what we're going to do. Every day we're going to do situational hitting on the field. So all that stuff kind of helped us young guys understand our role and, what we got to do, when the situation arises. So that helped. And, Greg Vaughn, I talk to him still to this day, man, one of the best guys in baseball. Yes.
Oh, absolutely. And he hit 45 home runs. Of course, the year before he had hit 50 for the Padres when they went to the World Series. And certainly – there's a few guys even in the last 25, 30 years who only played 1 year with the Reds. Greg Vaughn, Mike Cameron, Sin Chu Chu, back in 2013. They play 1 year with the Reds, but they had huge impacts.
And, yes, they did.
Cameron was in that boat as well. You mentioned Larkin. Eddie said that, while Larkin was more of a lead by example guy, even though he was a veteran, he took infield and he was out there working hard all the time. I know probably it was frustrating coming up and being kind of quote unquote stuck behind a future Hall of Famer at your position, but what was it like to kind of work with him? And you formed as good a double play combination. I'll put it up there with Vizquel and Alomar in that era. What was it like though, coming up behind him, but also learning from him?
Well, coming up behind him, I was a young guy in the minor leagues. Larkin was the man. So I would get the call when they would go on the road. I would be the cat. I would be his caddy pretty much, Every road game. So I'm like, man, I'm going over there to get that big league food. I'm going over to get a little, meal money for the spring training trip. So every game on the road, I would go. And he would get like, maybe 2 or 3 at-bats, and I'd play the rest of the game. So I was excited about that. I would get to play in front of major league coaches. I mean, scouts would be there. So at that point, I was playing not only for the Reds, but if I didn't make it with the Reds, other scouts would see me and I would have a chance to probably get on another team. So I wouldn't take nothing for granted. I would get out there and I'd play hard. I'd make plays and I played pretty well. So playing behind him, it helped me out a whole bunch because I would get a lot of play in spring training and playing with him. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer. That's all I can say. I mean, like I said, he didn't say much to me, but I watched him when I got called up in, I think, 98, or I didn't play a lot. I would sit on the bench. I didn't play around. I would watch him and Boone, what they were doing, and that helped me when I did play. When I got in there, I knew what to do, where to position myself, and, you know, playing with them. We just, like you said, we created a good combo. I mean, I don't like to talk about myself, but I think we were one of the top 2-3 combos in, you know, in Major League Baseball at that time. So, I mean, it was great playing with Larkin, man. Like I said, I miss those days. I really do.
No doubt about it. All right, so I'm going to bring up maybe your most memorable moment of that 1999 season, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but and I've got a side story with that as well. A 7-5 12th inning win over the Cardinals on September 26th. So it's getting down to crunch time here. You came up in the 12th inning, and you hit a home run to win the game. What were you thinking? Again, you mentioned already you're not a home run hitter. You hit your share that year. But you're not a home run hitter. You come up in the 12th. What's Pokey Reese thinking as he comes to the plate?
Well, I think it was first and second. LaRue and Kerry Robinson was on, I think. And then Ricky Pitalico or someone threw – I think he threw a wild pitch, and the runners advanced, I think it was. But the next pitch – it may have been the first pitch I saw off Ricky Pitalico. But somehow the runners got to second and third. I mean, I was just looking to drive the ball in the gap, looking for a good pitch to hit. And he – I think he was trying to throw a get-me-over slider or something like that, and it just spun up there over the plate. And I was like, man, just get the bat on it, get the ball in the outfield, and get these runs in to tie the game. And the ball happened to continue to go out. I mean, we were in the playoff, thick of the playoff hunt then, you know what I mean? So, that was, like you said, that was one of my biggest moments of that 99 season and of my career. So, I was blessed to be in that position and just put the ball in play, and it happened to go out.
Well, and Eddie, I think Eddie might have gotten on base, and then Kerry Robinson might have run for him. I forget the scenario he and I discussed earlier on this show, earlier on one of the other episodes. But I'll tell you the same story I told him. My girlfriend of only a month or two at that point, who's now my wife, so we've been together since 1999, she and I went down to the game. It's a Sunday afternoon. We ended up sitting next to a woman. She was probably in her 80s, and she's by herself, and she said, "My husband and I always used to come down for Sunday afternoon games, and he's gone now." And she said she didn't want to miss, you know, what could be a great game. And sure enough, boy, it was. And my girlfriend at the time, we stood there with that woman and talked throughout the game. But then when you hit that home run, I've never lifted up another person as high as I did my girlfriend. And we twirled around. And, oh, my goodness, you put so much happiness in Reds fans' hearts that day. It was amazing. It was great. Yes. And, honestly, I bought this not long after that. So, you know, and again, we're still together today. So how did you didn't even know you helped unite a couple that to this day is still together.
And I thank you for the support, man. I really do appreciate that. Yes.
Well, no, it was great. It was great. So we talked about, okay, now this idea that you had that team and you didn't make the playoffs, but even talking to Scott Williamson recently, he said he was on the 03 Red Sox, you know, the second half of the season that almost went to the World Series, got beat by Aaron Boone. but he was on the 04 Red Sox. He has a World Series ring, but he says that 99 team was his favorite of his career. Where does it rank for you?
Oh, it's top. It's number one. I mean, I was raised in that organization, raised in the city, and they gave me my shot. Yes, I won that World Series, and that's the pinnacle of every player who gets to that, gets to the major league. But that bond that we had of all those guys, you know, Casey, Boone, Larkin, Talvinsey, Dimitri, Hammonds, Tucker, you know, I can go on and name all 25 guys. But, I mean, it's all about that camaraderie I had with those guys and those 5 years that I played in Cincinnati. But that 99 team was the favorite team that I played on, yes.
Well, let's go ahead. I want to go through your career a little more, and then we'll come back. We'll talk about some of those teammates. You end up, technically, you were traded to the Rockies in December of 01, but then you were granted free agency, and you ended up signing with the Pirates. I just looked it up. I don't see a Reds bobblehead for you anywhere. I have the little beanie baby thing with your name on it. I got that at a game. I think I had to bribe a little kid with $20 to get it from him because they only gave it to kids. But while you're in Pittsburgh, you did have a bobblehead night. What was your time in Pittsburgh like? And of course, as Reds fans, we saw you come back to Cincinnati, and that wasn't very comfortable for us. Same with, you know, when Casey went over there and things like that. That's a tough watch. Even Reggie Sanders, who had been a Red before. But what was your time in Pittsburgh like?
Yeah, it was good. The city is great. The field, I mean, it's one of the best skyline, you know, picturesque scenes in baseball. You can see the city, you know, that bridge. So, you know, I was a Pittsburgh Pirate fan growing up. Okay. You know, I was my little league team had the same exact hats, the colors, the black and gold. So that was my team. You know, Dave Parker, you know what I mean? Van Slyke, Bonilla, you know, Kent Tecove, Dre Back, you know, all those guys. I love the Pirates. So it was great getting the opportunity to go over there and play for my, you know, childhood team. And we had a real young team, you know what I mean? You know, we had Brian Giles and Kendall. Mike Williams was, you know, the older guys. Reggie Sanders came over there one year with me. So we were real young and, you know, we struggled. I mean, but I got hurt one year. So it was tough, but like I said, I got the opportunity to play with my childhood, you know, my favorite team. So it was pretty good over there.
Now, you mentioned the World Series ring that you have. So you were on that 04 team, the Red Sox. Just take me through that a little bit, because that was the, you know, the Yankees are the evil empire. Mm-hmm. And everybody said, I remember Pedro saying that the Yankees are his daddy and all those things. Can you just, I guess, tell me a little bit about that team and kind of being down 0-3 and then beating them and going to sweep the World Series?
A lot of different characters, you know. We had Millar, Damon, Manny, Pedro, Big Poppy, Shield, Veritek, Damon, Trot, Bill Miller. So it was a lot of different, you know, cast of characters over there. And we were struggling during the year. We were up and down, winning, losing. But one day we came in and we had a meeting. And, you know, everybody was like 25 guys, 25 calves. We got to stop that. So, you know, went out and had a team dinner. And after that, I think we were in Toronto when that happened. After that, we came together as one. And then when you do that, you'll see, you know, you have better outcomes. Everybody riding together in calves or everybody on the bus, you know, creating camaraderie. So that's what we did. And we started playing well. And, you know, Yankees, everybody thought they were going to, you know, the better team that year, but we knew what we had inside the locker room. You know what I mean? So we get into the playoffs, down 0-3. I mean, we didn't give up. No one gave up in the locker room, but, you know, we heard the talk with the media. So, you know, we came together and like, let's win today and go from there. And, you know, that's what we did. And I mean, the rest is history. I mean, oh man, it's awesome. I made the last out of that, you know, ALCS and you know, that was pretty special. You know, playing with Mankiewicz, his good friend. So, you know, that was a special moment. And like I say all the time, I was blessed to be in that opportunity. That year, I was a free agent. I had a chance. It came between Boston and New York. And I picked Boston because I had the braids. You know, I had the hair on my face in New York.
They weren't going to let you do that.
Right. So I also wanted to play with Manny because Manny was in the same draft with me and Dimitri in 91. So I also wanted to play with him, Pedro. So I chose the Red Sox, and I think I made the right choice.
Well, and I've got a radar up, obviously, at that time because you were one of my favorite Reds of the era just before that. And so I do remember being at home watching, you know, hey, you said you made that last out. But Terry Francona, he had you in games, like meaningful spots. Like you weren't just some bit player on that team. You were playing a meaningful defensive role specifically, and you had your speed still. So certainly you were a big part of that team.
Yeah, I came in. I knew my role. So when we traded for Cabrera, I knew I pretty much wasn't going to play as much as I did, you know, before he got over there. So, man, I understood my role. I mean, I'm trying to win and do whatever I need to help the team win. We've got one common goal, and that's to win it all. And you got to do – sometimes you got to do what you got to do. And I knew I was the defensive, you know, stopper for Bellhorn. I would go in at second. You know, I knew I probably wouldn't get in at bat. Who cares? Just catch the ball. That's what I was known for, and, you know, that's what I did. And Terry, I played against Terry in the minor leagues. He was a Birmingham Barons manager, so he pretty much remembered me. I played against him. He was a Phillies manager. He pretty much remembered me from that. So, you know, when I signed over there, you know, he gave me the opportunity. They gave me the opportunity, and I was blessed to be a part of it. Yes.
You bring that up. Did you play against Michael Jordan?
Yes, 94. He was on that Birmingham Barons team. Yes,
that's
I
right.
Did.
What
yes.
was that like?
It was a pretty awesome, you know, he's my favorite basketball player of all time. So, you know, he would get out there, and I knew pretty much when you study your hitters, you knew what he was going to do. He would just try and chop it in the hole and use those long strides to, you know, try to beat it out. So every time he'd come up there, I'd tell Eric Owens, who was the third baseman at the time, I said, man, Ebo, we called him Ebo, go ahead and slide over because I'm in the hole. He's going to try and chop it over here and beat it out. So every time he'd chop it, he'd get up, I'd move in the hole, and he hit it right to me, and I'd get him by a step. So one time he got to second base. You know, we would see him come in his Porsche. He had all kind of different cars. So he got on second base. And I said, yo, Mike, Pokey Reese, nice to meet you. Mike Jordan, Mr. Jordan. He's like, I was like, man, won't you sell me one of those cars? He's like, man, I ain't selling you blankety blank if you don't stop taking these hits away from me. He said, Mike, I got to get to the show, man. I can't do that. And he just started laughing. It was a pretty good moment.
Yeah. Actually, the more we talk about it, I remember, I think it was during the pandemic, that, you know, you a lot of time to kill back then. So I remember seeing video of one of those games because yes. ESPN even did some of those games, I think. And I remember, hey, that's Pokey taking away a base hit from him. I guess from there, that's 94. We've talked about the 99 season in depth. Mm-hmm. Now, in between 99 and 2000, it was rumored, of course, that King Griffey Jr. wanted to leave Seattle and get closer to home.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout that offseason, Jim Bowden famously was balking at making the trade in large part because they wanted Pokey Reese. Mm-hmm. They wanted you. Mm-hmm. What's it like to go through that and to know that you're, you know, in discussions for a trade? And then, of course, when the trade, let's talk about that first, and then we'll talk about King Griffey Jr. coming.
Well, I mean, as a player, I let my agent handle that. You know, I have a responsibility to get myself ready to, you know, perform that season. So I pretty much, you know, you heard it. You know, of course I heard it, but I didn't really pay attention. If it happened, it happened. I mean, I love Cincinnati. I didn't want to leave Cincinnati. But, you know, Jim, I think I was his first pick when he became GM. So, you know, he didn't want to obviously do the deal. And I'm pretty glad he didn't do it because I wanted to stay with my friends. You know, I came up with. So it was cool to me. You know what I mean? I'm wanted in both places. So, you know, I just let my agent handle it and I continue to get myself ready for the season. That's what I did.
Yeah, as a fan at the time, I can't go back and say, oh, no, we wanted to keep that team together. We didn't want King Griffey Jr. Because who wouldn't want King Griffey Jr., right?
Exactly.
But the injuries and all the things that piled up and the fact that the Reds weren't able to maybe have as many good pitchers in part because of paying Griffey. Hindsight being 2020, we would have said, well, maybe you try to sign Greg Vaughn back. You keep Mike Cameron, who, my goodness, he was such a good player.
Yeah.
You know, things might have gone differently. And I know, you know, Scott Williamson spoke with me about that as well. But what was it like for you to kind of be on that team with King Griffey Jr. coming to town? I guess as a player, you weren't that much younger than him, but you're just enough younger than him that, boy, you were still in high school when he came out and was a huge star right away.
Right. I mean, it was great. Junior is a Hall of Fame player. Junior is one of the best players to ever play this game. So, as a teammate and a player, I was happy to have him. You know what I mean? I mean, shoot, who wouldn't want, like you said, who wouldn't want Ken Griffey Jr.? But my thing was, this is no knock on Junior. I love Junior. But give us a chance to repeat what we, you know, we had going in 99. You know what I mean? Let's see if we can run it back, you know? So that was my thinking at the time. But I'm not the boss. I'm just the player. Jim Bowden, you know, is the GM, so he wanted to come home, and you got to bring Junior home.
You can't say no to that.
You can't say no to that. So I understand on both sides, but you know, it was a great plan with Junior. Junior, you know, he was a funny guy. He would always try to crack on you, crack the jokes. You know, we get back at him, he'd get mad. You know, stuff like that. But I mean, it was awesome playing with the guy, just to see what he could do, what he did. You know what I mean? He's a Hall of Famer. So I mean, I enjoyed my time playing with Junior. I love the guy, you know. And, you know, he's from Cincinnati. He's Moeller, you know what I mean? So I was happy to see him come home, Yes.
Well, we were all too. And, you know, again, I know there's people over the years that I had discussions with a few fans, like, how do you blame the guy for getting hurt? You know, like, yeah. That's really the only thing that made that part of it not good. Like, mm-hmm. like, sure, I guess they could have signed more pitchers that offseason. Right. I don't think they would have traded Denny Nagel in mm-hmm. early July, like a full month before the trade deadline in 2000, mm-hmm. if they didn't have the weight of that contract, you know, to worry about.
Right.
But that's all, like you said, that wasn't from your standpoint. I want to talk to you about some teammates specifically from 99. We've mentioned mm-hmm. names. I got to cover a game in 2000 up in Cleveland. I was an intern for a Columbus radio station. They sent me to the game. You came back and beat the Indians there in extra innings. I think Griffey actually hit the tying double, and then Boone hit a home run or a double mm-hmm. to win the game. Mm-hmm. But in the clubhouse after the game, immediately one observation as me, a 21-year-old college student, made: Pokey and Dimitri Young are like best friends. Like, yeah. You guys are on this leather couch after the game, just hanging out, you know. Tell me a little bit about what that kind of friendship is and how it formed. And you mentioned you were drafted in the same class with him, but not by the right. same team. So, but you knew who he was even back mm-hmm. then. And then mm-hmm. just, I guess, tell me how all that came together.
Yeah. Like you said, we are the same class. He was the fourth pick. I was the 20th pick. And, you know, being in the same year, you would read articles about Dimitri. You know, you see things about Dimitri. And, you know, we played against each other in the minor leagues. Our first year, he was with Johnson City. I was with Princeton. So we played, you know, against each other in A-ball and Ricky ball. Then we got to Triple-A. He was with the Cardinals, and I was with Indianapolis. So we played against each other, and we just, you know, we formed the bond. I mean, before the game, we'd go out and, you know, talk before the games, you know. So that's how the bond started. And then when we got the chance, he got the chance to come over to Cincinnati. It was, I mean, instant karma, you know what I mean? We hung out. Our girlfriends at the time, they hung out together, you know what I mean? So, I mean, we just clicked. I mean, somehow, you know, you just got a friend you just click with, and that's what happened. And we still good friends to this day, and I can't wait to see him come opening day.
That'll be great. That'll be mm-hmm. great. I guess I'm just going to go in order here, and if you have memories of any of these guys you want to bring up, that'd be great. We mentioned Eddie Tobbins. He was a catcher, mm-hmm. but, boy, he hit for power that year. Had a good – I think he hit 310 also. So he's right. a good hitting – a left-handed hitting catcher. What are your memories of Eddie?
Yeah, Ed was one of the best hitters on the team, you know what I mean? You know, big hits. He had big hits against us. And like we talked about earlier, he was part of that 9 home run game. So Ed, he lives not too far from me now. He moved to South Carolina. So yeah, he was a great hitter, good defensive catcher. He struggled at times throwing, but you know, as an infielder, when you know you had a catcher who didn't throw accurate, you just gotta help him out. And that's what me and Larkin tried to do. We tried to, you know, keep the ball in front, but Ed was he's a great guy. Not only a good player, he's a great guy. So that's what I remember about Ed.
Okay, and you stood there beside Sean Casey those couple years. He was the first mm-hmm. baseman. Had a great year that year, a great mm-hmm. Batting average and 99 RBI and 25 home runs. I guess, Sean, my guess is it's hard to not like that guy. He's just mm-hmm. so happy all the time, it felt like. And I know, you know, he's got a great career now. He's got his own podcast and, mm-hmm. and doing the things on MLB Network. What was he like to be around? I guess, did you ever get tired of his energy?
No. You can't get tired of that energy, because when you're not doing well, you look over at Casey, he's all energy. So it helps you stay on top of your game. So, mm-hmm. you know, but playing next to Casey, me and him would talk. You know, I would be like, Casey, man, I got this. You just take a couple steps. If you can't get it, I'll be there. So that's what we did, and I covered as much ground as I could, because I knew Case was not the, you know, the quickest or didn't move real fast. So I told him, look, I let him know when I was over there, go ahead and move over, and I'll do the rest. So Casey is one of the most talkative guys I've ever come across. So that's a good thing. But I mean, I was his locker mate too. So, you know, just sitting between him and Boone, it was great. But me and Casey, going back to in the days, we played against each other in high school here. He came down. He's Upper St. Clair, which is in Pennsylvania, and my high school, which is Lower Richmond. We had a spring tournament, and they came down And he was a, I think he was a sophomore and I was a senior. One year, he was a year behind me, but we ended up playing against each other in high school.
That's amazing.
Yeah, he remembered that game, and I remember this well. We ended up beating him. But
okay,
yeah.
I was going to ask.
Yeah, we ended up beating him and winning the tournament. But, yeah, I'll never forget that. I played against him in high school and ended up being his teammate in the majors.
That's amazing. That's great. Already talked quite a bit about Larkin. Yes. Aaron Boone, you just mentioned.
Playboy. We used to call him Playboy. Aaron, a pretty boy, man. I love that guy. Love that guy.
I guess because you think about it, even your friendship with Dimitri. Dimitri's mm-hmm. from out west, right, in California, right. And you're from South Carolina. Mm-hmm. You know, you talked about Casey being from Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Here's Aaron Boone. His dad was a big leaguer. I mean, he spent his time, and then he goes to USC. He lives in Southern California and all that stuff. I guess, what was he like to be around? And again, he had a bit of an energy about him, too, that probably was infectious.
Very intense. I mean, hated getting out. You know, he played the game how his brother played the game. He wasn't as, you know, rough on the helmets and stuff as his brother Brett was, but he was a very, very intense guy. I mean, great third baseman in my eyes, you know. That infield we had was a pretty good infield. So with Aaron Boone, Larkin, myself, and Casey. So, I mean, he was a great guy. Like I said, he was my locker mate, man, and, you know, just one of the good guys in the game. Great friend.
And then I guess you mentioned Greg Vaughn and his impact on the team as a whole, as a leader. Did he ever have any impact on you if maybe you were slumping or anything like that?
Yeah, he would say next at bat. I mean, this is the major leagues. They're paid to get you out. They're going to get you out. You're paid to get hits. You're going to hit. So, you know, when you go on a slump, he'd come over there. He just, you know, pat you on the back. Man, let's go. You know, go out there and play defense. If you can't hit it, stop them from getting hits. And that's what he did for me. You know what I mean? I got in a lot of slumps in my days, so you know what I mean. And Greg Vaughn was there to, you know, help me get out of those slumps. Like, go back to the fundamentals. Try and stay up the middle. Get jammed. Little things like that to help you stay on the ball, and it helped me out a lot.
And then Mike Cameron, we spoke about him some, but you both had 38 stolen bases mm-hmm. that year. Mm-hmm. Stolen bases are kind of coming back in vogue again now with mm-hmm. the larger bases and some of the rules. But back then, we still kind of thought of, hey, getting that bag. And I know Larkin had 30. Mm-hmm. So all three of you guys had 30 or more stolen bases. Mm-hmm. What was it like to see Cameron? Because he seemed like such a good athlete.
Yeah, Cam, I mean, he could cover some ground out there. Long legs, long strides. He could cover some ground. See, me and Mike, I think I didn't play against Mike in the minors, but when he came over there, it was just like instant karma. You know what I mean? He just fit right in with the younger. We had a lot of young guys, mm-hmm. and we all just fit in. And Cam, I would tell him, you play deep, man. Cover that back there. I'll get the little stuff, the bloopers and stuff like that. So that's what he did. And, you know, balls hitting the gap. You wouldn't think he'd get there, but he got there. So, you know what I mean? And that 38 bases we had, Dave Collins was our third base coach, our first base coach. So we had a thing. Dave Collins would say, once you lead off and you come back to first base, if I'm looking at you, directly at you, and you looking directly at me, next pitch you go. And every time it worked. Oh. And I mean, you know, we studied our pitchers too, but Dave Collins did a lot of studying of, you know, he was one of the great base stealers in our game as well. So, you know, that's what he did. He was like, man, if I'm looking at you, directly at you, you go. If I don't, you know, you just wait a couple pitches and we'll get this together. And that's what we did. And I'm telling you now, that's why I myself stole those 38 bags with the help of Dave Collins.
Well, and he was a positive guy too. Every time I heard him interviewed, he had like a little saying at the end of the interview mm-hmm. about, you know, love and giving it all you've got and all that.
Right.
And I remember him being very positive for fans to listen to, you know, the mm-hmm. way he talked. We'll go through a couple guys, Michael Tucker and Jeffrey Hammonds. It's amazing to me because Vaughn certainly was a veteran, probably got a day off here or there. Cameron mm-hmm. played almost every day in center field, but Tucker, Hammonds, and Dimitri, because Dimitri would play both first base and the outfield, mm-hmm. they all got at bats.
Yes.
Like if you go through that season, they all got a huge amount of outs, 350 or more at bats.
Mm-hmm.
Jack really kept all of you guys active, didn't he?
Yes. And I was just about to say, that goes back to the manager. Jack McKeon was one of the best. I mean, I love Jack till this day, man. He gave me my opportunity when they tried to bring other people in to play the, you know, second base role. And he stuck with me. So I thank him for that. But Jack made sure everybody got their bats. And Tucker and Hambone, they had some key at bats that year. You know what I mean? They played big outfield for us. You know, they could play all three positions. You know what I mean? So they played big roles. And to this day, me and Hambone, and we're real good friends. I don't talk to Tucker as much, but, you know, Hambone, yeah, he's still my boy, yeah.
Were there any pitchers that you got along with, or did those kind of, were those kind of separate?
No, I got along with everybody on the team. Williamson's a great friend.
Yeah, yeah.
Dennis Reyes, we call him Big Sweaty. You know, Scott Sullivan. You know, Danny Graves. Harness was a funny guy. You know what I mean? Nagel, oh, my God. Nagel and Harness kept everybody loose, man. I know pitchers, people say pitchers are different, but, you know, they play obviously a huge part of the team. So those guys were – I mean, we were all great, man, great friends. That's why that 99 team is special in my heart, man. I mean, those are my brothers, and I wish we could have went a little bit further. But, yeah. You know, we gave it all that year, I tell you that.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the end of that season, then I'll get you out on a couple softball questions. Mm-hmm. That weekend, Scott Williamson was not holding back at all when I spoke with him. He thought it was unfair that you had been, I think, both Saturday and Sunday involved in long rain delays up in Milwaukee. It was cold. You didn't get home until early the next morning on Monday. And those Mets, they were waiting on you here in Cincinnati. What are your thoughts of that weekend? And obviously, if you could have won Friday and Saturday, Sunday you didn't need to worry about it as much. Mm-hmm. And then Monday you could have pitched Harnish and things like that. But what do you remember about that weekend and then having to turn right around and play a few hours later when you got back?
Yeah, I remember it was cold. That field, you know, that clubhouse is, you know, Milwaukee, the old county stadium, that is terrible. 6 hours sitting in that place.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you can't do, you know, most clubhouses were pretty nice, but that was real old stadium. I mean, we just sitting in those old-time lockers, you know what I mean, walking back and forth to the cage. 6 hours is a long time to sit around and do nothing. You know what I mean? You can wait, sleep for a couple hours, wake up, and you still – you know, got to wait. So it was tough. It was cold. It was raining. And we can't blame nobody but ourselves. Yes, we had the delay, but we got to go out and perform. And we didn't perform. I mean, we didn't take Milwaukee for granted. No, we didn't. But we got beat. They played better than we did. And it cost us. And like you said, the Mets were sitting there just waiting. I'm sure they were happy about the rain delay, but we were just sitting, you know, just sitting there waiting, and then we obviously got to play. We didn't perform well, and I think we ended up winning the last game and had to come home and whatever it was and play that game, and it was tough. It was tough.
Absolutely, and you think about it, even then, I know that was, you know, 5 or 6 years after the wild card had come into play, but you win 96 games. Mm. You go 19-9 in September.
Mm-hmm.
How many years would you not make the playoffs? That was just crazy. The Astros finished right there above you. The Mets tied with you. They're waiting to go on out to Arizona. And Eddie was talking to me a little bit about I looked it up too. Like, you had handled the Diamondbacks that year. You had that great road trip at one point where you went 9-1. You mentioned the road games. You won 52 road games that year. Hal McCoy called you the big road machine.
Mm-hmm.
Even the Braves, you didn't really struggle with the Braves much that year, I don't think, either. And you'd played the Astros really well.
Right.
So the other teams in the playoffs in 99, it felt like, hey, you had a chance. And certainly all of us fans hoped you could get that chance. And, boy, I can't imagine, especially now with the extra teams involved in the playoffs, any team goes 96 wins, you're in, right? And you're probably hosting.
Yeah, you're in the playoffs. You know, you plan to get the big thing, plan to get that ring. So, I mean, it just wasn't meant to be, but, I mean, we did. That's a lot of baseball games to win right there. 52 games on the road. That's a – man, wow.
And you had a rougher April, and certainly you play a lot of home games right at the beginning of the season because Cincinnati always plays at home unless there's some strike or something going on. And so I just – you know, I'm amazed that went down the way it did. But I remember, you know, I'm telling you, like – I was at Ohio State. We did Ohio State's football games on the radio for our student radio station. I'd be at the stadium preparing, and you're playing an afternoon game before the Buckeyes kicked off. I've got the radio on out in the bleachers with another Reds fan that was on the media relations team with Ohio State. We're listening to every pitch. I mean, it just was an amazing season. And certainly as a fan, I thank you and all your teammates for, and this current Reds team, I don't know if you're following it much.
Oh yeah.
Last year, you know, they didn't win 96 games, but they had that 12 game winning streak. They bring up all those rookies. The excitement level reminded me a little bit of what you guys did. And I don't know if you follow the Reds anymore, but,
yeah, I do.
Those guys, you know, Ellie De La Cruz and Matt McClain specifically, boy, they're an exciting bunch.
Yeah, De La Cruz, that's my wife's favorite player.
That's great.
Yeah, yeah, she likes him, yeah.
Maybe she can meet him on opening day.
we tried, we came up there last year. They had something going on up there, and I were up there. We were trying to meet him, but, you know, it's tough before the game trying to get those guys. Absolutely. You know, take a picture or whatever. So hopefully this time I'll get to, you know, get a picture with my son. So,
yeah. Well, hey, two quick, easy topics and I'll let you go. I really appreciate your time. You and our, a guy I work with here at the Riverfront, he always said you wore your cap at a jaunty angle, but that's true. I mean, you would wear it to the side a little bit, and kids from age 8 to 22 or whatever I was at the time, perhaps we had our hat on a little crooked.
Right.
Where did that start, and why did you do it? And
it started, I just put the hat on and turned it that way. I mean, it wasn't nothing. Somebody asked me, was it because of the Negro Leagues? No, I said, I just, that's just the way I used to wear my hat. I don't know. I don't know why, but I just wore it that way.
Okay. And I've got behind me here, early in 99, they had switched to these new uniforms. You had the vests with the pinstripes on the at home, and then, you know, of course, the black around the lettering. But but earlier in the year, you wore the red T-shirts underneath, and then you wore the red hats with the black bills. But because you did so well on the road, I think, you and Larkin and the whole team started wearing the black hat at home with the black sleeves underneath. What were you – did you like those uniforms? I mean, I don't know if you even care about it. You're in the big leagues, you know, but The previous uniforms, especially maybe the home ones, were a little bit more plain and things like that. What were your thoughts when they switched to this that newer look?
Well, I mean, I loved it. I mean, you know what I mean? It's something different. You know what I mean? And if you winning in it, why not wear it? You know what I mean? But my favorite uniform was the road uniform. I love that gray.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I love that gray.
Starting in 99, the gray with the – okay, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
that was my favorite uniform, the gray.
So, well, I like – the previous gray that had pinstripes, I thought that was yes. sharp.
Yes, that
I
was.
I didn't care as much for the home uniforms with the white hat and all that.
Right.
No,
I didn't
like that as much. But you're right. And people today don't like the fact that they put the little thing around the C, you know, on the red cap. The one behind me has a white, they call it a drop shadow. The red hat has a black one. And people don't like that. I like it. Yeah, there you go. I like it in part because that's what you guys became winners in, you know?
Yeah, right.
And I really, that to me, it's a memory, you know, of what you guys did and what I was, you know, watching at the time. But Pokey, I really appreciate your time.
Okay.
If you, you're going to go to opening day here, I'll be up in the crowd cheering for you. I'm sure are you really excited to get out there? And I heard Dimitri the night it was announced, he was on WLW and he's like, we don't even know what we're going to be doing, but we're excited.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I'm just excited. I don't even know what a Grand Marshal does, but I know I'm excited to be part of it. You know what I mean? So yeah, I got one quick question for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. My one of my best friends here, he's a Michigan fan, right? He said you went to Ohio State, right?
Yeah, that's Ohio Stadium there. Okay.
Right. So maybe one year we could get together, me and him, drive up to Columbus, and we get to see an Ohio State-Michigan game if you can pull some strings.
Oh, I've got to pull the strings. Okay. Yeah, we could maybe pull that off. It gets cold, though, in November. I know you.
We're not worrying about that. We're watching football, so it really doesn't matter.
Didn't you have football offers when coming out of high school?
Yeah, I had Arizona State, and I had a lot of small schools around here, so – but yeah, I had some pretty good. I played football, and that football and baseball is neck and neck with me, you know, because I just love the game, both games. So yeah, I signed with Arizona State. They were gonna send me to a junior college, and then I was probably gonna try and go on to, you know, Arizona State. So yes,
but that first round draft pick,
can't turn it down.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe I can ask Larkin for some Michigan tickets since my home.
Well, yeah. So Michigan. So if you get in with Larkin, he the years, you know, it's, this year it's at Ohio State, but the years it's up in Michigan, you know, maybe if Larkin could hook us all up, and then I'll get you when they come to Ohio State.
Yeah, I'll have to get with Larkin about that.
Yeah, the stories from Barry Larkin about Bo Schembechler and, you know, how he didn't want to play. He didn't want him playing baseball. Yeah, he played at Michigan, and he was going to play football and baseball. But then he ended up not doing the football side of things. So
I didn't know that because I know his brother played football for Notre Dame. So, I mean, he's in the family.
Well, I believe Ken Griffey Jr.'s brother played at Ohio State.
Yeah, Craig.
Mm-hmm. So did you grow up a South Carolina fan? Or?
Oh, yeah, die hard.
Yeah. My cousin went to Clemson, so you and I both have a disrespect for Clemson. They beat Ohio State way too many times in my lifetime. So
I definitely hate Clemson.
Well, he'll be sad to hear that because he's 10 years younger than me, and I texted him the other day and showed him. I was like, I'm going to talk to Pokey Reese. And he wrote back. He's like, tell him he was my favorite player. And
tell him I said thank you for that, though. Yeah.
But you don't like Clemson.
No, I mean, I can't like him because I am from, you know, I'm a Gamecock.
You're a Gamecock. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, Pokey, thanks so much again. And enjoy Cincinnati here coming up. I'm so excited for you guys.
All right, thank you. What's the weather going to be? You think it's going to be like up there?
It's a good question. Today it's in the low 70s, 73, 74. Okay. But over the weekend it's a high of 52. So you never know in Ohio.
You never know.
Yeah. So we'll see. Hopefully I'll text you if I see a weather report and we'll go from there.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. Hang on the line here.